Welcome to the official podcast of Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society. This is Whispers from the Dark. Good morning and welcome to Whispers from the Dark. I am your host, Barnaby, and we have an awesome guest on today's show. Very accomplished, very list of accolades just boggles my mind, to be honest. And so I want to get into this and get started here. First of all, though, if you are interested in showing your support for Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society and all the things we do, head on over to our website, Wisconsin Caps, and click on Shop Our Store. There you can find t-shirts and hats and t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, magnets, stickers, mugs, tote bags, tank tops, pillows, and anything else that we can slap a logo on. You can find it there, and you can wear it or show it and show your support for everything that we do. While you're online, make sure you head on over to all of our social media platforms. You can find us on Patreon, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube at Wisconsin Caps, or on Instagram at WI Caps. October, I don't know why this one comes up out of order. October 6th, I believe, I will be doing a presentation at the Kenosha, Wisconsin Southwest Branch Public Library. So if you're in that area, come on out and say hi and check out my presentation at the Kenosha Library in October. And August, I will be at the Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie. We will be at the Great Lakes Paranormal Conference in Glenbula, Wisconsin, September 22nd through the 24th. And we'll be at CryptidCon in Lexington, Kentucky, and that is the weekend before Thanksgiving in November. That's it. That's my limited amount of engagements yet this year. So I've run the gambit so far. So now I get to spend a couple months out researching and yeah, so it'll be good to be back out in the field and doing some work. Still busy every single weekend, but you just won't see me out in the field. I don't know what I'm talking about. See me in the field and not at conventions. So there. All right. And that brings us to our guest today. My guest has 30 years in the paranormal industry. She is a doctor of philosophy in metaphysical humanistic sciences, specializing in paranormal science. I didn't even know you could do that. You could be a paranormal doctor. Anyway, she is the host of numerous podcasts and the founder of the Witches Paranormal Society, and lots of documentary series and movies and videos and stuff, and I will let her tell you all about that. So without any further ado, my guest on today's show, Dr. Heather Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hey there, how are you doing?
I'm tongue-tied as usual in the morning because, you know, it's just the way I am. I feel like nobody wants to hear all the stuff at the beginning of the show, you know?
Mm-hmm. I get that.
I try and get through it as fast as possible, and I just trip over myself and stumble because I am tired of saying it every show. So
no, I feel the same way with my morning show. It's like I try to review everything I'm doing. It's like, but you have the same viewers over and over. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to skip it this time.
Yep. But there's that one person that didn't hear it, and they got it.
Right.
And now I got that Kenosha Library thing. I have them in my little presentation. I have them put in by date.
Okay.
And that one is 10/6, and it should come up in, you know, between CryptidCon and it doesn't. It comes up in the beginning. I don't know why. So
technology.
It's all out of focus and out of date and stuff. So whatever. and I can't talk this morning, apparently. It's a great day. So besides what I've covered, tell us everybody a little bit about yourself, what you do, and who you are.
Okay, yeah. As you mentioned, I've been in the paranormal field for more than 30 years. I started when I was a teenager after having experiences seeing my grandfather, was curious about everything paranormal, couldn't figure out why he was appearing, and just kind of fell down that rabbit hole, and I've been following it ever since. It wasn't until about 5-6 years ago where I started doing paranormal research almost full time. It's, you know, even though I do freelance work and other things to keep the lights on, I actually spend a majority of my day researching paranormal, networking, trying to find out different places to go, different haunted locations to try to get. My ultimate goal is to get the science behind the paranormal. Not we know it happens, or a majority of us know it happens. I want to find out the why it happens. And throughout the years, I've done everything from fundraising events for local locations. I have 3 books that are out right now with contracts for 4 more. The Witches Paranormal Society is a fun little thing that a friend of mine came to me. She's the Sin City Witch out in Vegas, where I had lived for the last 7 years. And she said, wouldn't it be great if we could actually train witches on how to use their abilities and, you know, their natural training to investigate paranormal activity the right way? So, you know, her and I co-founded that together, and it's been a rocky road on that one because she has been dealing with other stuff. So, but I talked to her a couple weeks ago. It's perfect timing, and we're looking to relaunch that and do different things nationwide with training sessions and investigations on that as well.
That's so cool. That's so cool. My problem is I've been trying to do, like you said, do this full time, mm-hmm. you know, with all my, you know, I'm looking down your resume and I'm going, man, I can relate. There's just so much going on here. And I got a full-time job, 10 hours a day, sometimes 12 mm-hmm. hours a day, Monday through mm-hmm. Thursday. And I'm trying to get away from that and do all this stuff, you know, write books mm-hmm. and I'm doing ghost tours and, you know, haunted ghost walks and stuff like that. And I've started building all these other side hustles and mm-hmm. I still have my day job. So instead of taking one and getting rid of the other, I've just added all of this on top of it. And it's just not going so well.
Yeah, no, I've been lucky enough. When I first started going to college, it was for journalism and communication. So I've actually been a freelance writer since I was 16, starting at local newspapers. And now there's a lot of, you know, writing warehouses online where you can sign up. And if someone needs work or help, they reach out to you. And so I'm lucky enough to have that. And I can turn it down if I'm too busy.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is definitely cool. So let's talk about a little bit about your degree itself. Mm-hmm. So what is this? Like you have a, I'll let you say it.
It's actually from the Institute of Metaphysical and Humanistic Studies, and that's based out of here in Florida, but the classes are all online. Dr. Kelly is an amazing guy. He started the online university as a theological school. And I believe it's also partnered, I think it's called Thomas Francis University, which handles all of the theological studies and certifying, you know, priests and pastors, you know, and life coaching certifications as well. And he's always had an interest in the paranormal. So they've developed and worked with other schools across the, you know, around the world, actually, to create different paranormal programs. And one of them is the paranormal science. They have cryptozoology, parapsychology, ufology. They have all the different courses that you can take. And I love it because it's you take them as you can. You can take, you know, up to a year. I know people who've been in the program for 4 years and they're just doing whatever they can when they can. And it is accredited by the American Association of Psychics, has them backing. And it's not your typical 4-year degree, but it is a theological degree, which makes it to where we, you know, because in the paranormal field, you know, we help people. So, you know, it teaches us how to help clients, how to help people suffering from paranormal activity and how to help the spirits. And then the paranormal science track that I took, that one teaches us forensic evidence, the scientific method, thermodynamics and how it fits with the paranormal field and all of that stuff. So a lot of great information coming from there.
Very cool. Very cool. That's I have a degree in cryptozoology from the Center of Excellence. Yep. Over in England as well. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. kind of like how that works. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't know that there was a like whole schools for, you know, this stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no 4-year schools anymore that do it. I think there is one in California. And I know the Harper College where I went to in Illinois, they offer paramormal classes. I think they have 4 paranormal classes in their roster, but they're electives. But with the online schools that they have, you still have to do your research to find an accredited one, or at least one that's not pay for your degree and here you go. I actually had to work hard for this one. And people don't realize that when they see that, you know, even though it's online, there's a lot of work that goes behind what Dr. Kelly wants from all of his students.
That's awesome. And to go along with some of your other work here, it said on your bio that you work with the Warren Legacy Foundation.
I actually am left in October of last year. Okay. Just kind of decided it was great working for them, met a lot of great people, but I just didn't have the time to put in the effort to help them anymore.
I absolutely love that foundation. I wonder if you can kind of tell a little bit about what it is and what they do as well.
Yeah, it's founded by Lorraine Warren and her grandson, Chris McKinnell. And they basically take the, you know, philosophy that Ed and Lorraine Warren had and use it to help clients all around the world, across the country. And a lot of the work that we did was mostly counseling. Because a lot of people, when you help them with paranormal activity, it's really not paranormal activity. It's them just needing counseling, and because they're the ones self-manifesting it. But if needed, they have a team ready to go help. And also a lot of educating was our main goal.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely believe in the paranormal. I definitely know that there's stuff out there. But like you said, sometimes people just end up in a bad situation, and it's not necessarily, you know, your grandma coming to visit anymore. It's something else that,
right.
You know, and then they need that more of the psychological than the, you know, paranormal.
Yep.
That's really cool. So thank you for all that you've done with that and your work with that as well.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about, you said that you wanted to look into what all this stuff is and how it works. So what have you found? What are your theories? Where are we going with this? What do you think?
A lot more questions than I'm getting answers in this field.
I'm sorry, I'll focus it down to one at this point.
But there's two main theories that I'm working on. One, I have no clue how to research it yet. I'm still working on that, but it's the parallel universes. We're all on wavelengths, and as our wavelengths cross between the universes, that's when we're experiencing paranormal activity. I personally feel it's tied with the moon phase, because you have an increase in paranormal activity during the full moon or the new moon. So I feel that there's something connected there that, you know, we're crossing, and, you know, sometimes maybe we're the spirits to them, because they're like, what the heck, this person's in my in my area. So still not 100% sure how that one is going to be researched, because I'm still diving into the theory of different universes. But one that I've actually started deep diving in is, it's called the Superman theory. And this came from the UK. They did a paper on, scientists put the entire Bible on a little circular disc about this big. And then from there, they developed the theories that quartz crystal can absorb and record energy, which is what they did with that Bible. So they're saying that areas with higher concentrations of quartz crystal, you're going to have higher paranormal activity. And the areas that I've noticed that have that higher concentration would be the Bermuda Triangle, Nevada Triangle, Alaska Triangle, and all of those different areas.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. I want to come back to that. I want to go back, though. And you're talking about the moon phases. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do we have any scientific evidence, or is there anything that when the moon changes phases, we have the rising and the falling of the tide and stuff. Is there anything that signifies a change in vibrational energy with that as well?
Yes and no. One, actually, when people ask me about the scientific method and how it's used in paranormal activity, one experiment I tell them to do is to get an Eddy Plus and find somewhere outside. Hopefully it doesn't rain like it does here in Florida every night. But find a place outside where you can set it and it won't be disturbed, and document the moon phase and the temperature and what the weather was like for 30 days. And I've done that before, and you'll notice that as you get closer to the full moon, the energies and the EMF spikes increase. Mm-hmm. And then as you get further away from the full moon, they start to decrease. So that I'm kind of documenting. I haven't done it in a while, but it's interesting how you put it in the same place, you know, every day, and you get that little bit of, and it's just a gradual increase. It's not a sudden spike. So I'm kind of thinking that there might be some type of, in addition to like the tides, some type of electrical connection between us and the moon.
Interesting. I have one of those devices.
And it's a great way to practice the scientific method too, because you do the experiment over and over and it gets people in the habit of doing it, because not everybody dismisses that method. They're like, oh, you can't do that because ghosts don't act on command. I'm like, but there's other things in this field that you can do following the scientific method to a T.
We actually did a experiment. One of our first research locations was the Burlington Vortex or the Burlington Woods here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And there's supposed to be high paranormal. There was Bigfoot activity. There was fairy activity in this area. And it runs right along a power line cut. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we theorized was that the power line cut during the day runs electricity through it at, you know, lower levels. Mm-hmm. And at night, when people are coming home, turning on their lights, turning on electronics, there's more electrical running through there, which is amping up this energy. So what we did is we went through the entire woods along the trails and took energy readings during the day. And then we took them at night and we found that there was no difference. So it was really interesting to be able to look at all the weird phenomenon stuff going on and disprove that it was caused by this power line coming through. Yep. So.
And that's what we need to be doing more often. A lot of people just take theories that they've read online or heard from someone else as, okay, that must be what's causing the paranormal activity, instead of actually researching it for themselves to prove or disprove their own theories.
I think another big thing is the importance of knowing what your equipment does and how it works. Because everyone's running around with these EMF meters and, you know, the tri-field meters and all this stuff. And they're like, oh, look, it's spiked. There's a ghost, you know. But nobody knows why we're using this. So I'm actually working on a presentation that goes over all that stuff too.
Or my favorite is they use generic batteries. And we actually had it happen to us, not knowing, not even paying attention. But one of the investigators that I was working with, he needed batteries because his other batteries died. So he grabbed just whatever he had in his drawer, and they were generic. And generic batteries are unshielded. And he put it in his K2 meter, and the meter was kept off for most of the investigation. But the minute we turned it on, it was like almost like Morse code. And we were even saying, we don't understand Morse code. What are you trying to say to us? We don't get it. And it just was doing that the whole night until he realized the batteries he put in there. And some people do that not knowing. And they're like, oh my God, all night, my K2 was going crazy. And it's like, well, check your batteries and also check to see if you're sitting next to an outlet.
Definitely. I didn't know that about the batteries. I use all Energizer in ours.
Yeah, but you're good with those.
Yeah. I have things popping up on my screen here. I use those, but I have used cheaper batteries and stuff. And I don't know that I've noticed the energy spikes like that, but they don't last as long. Like any of the generic, you know, Dollar Tree batteries, I used to buy a ton of those. And then I found you can buy bulk Energizer online for really cheap. And I mean, like you go to Walmart and you get 2 9-volts for like $8.
Yeah.
Insane. Insane. With the amount of batteries that we go through out on these investigations and stuff.
We need to start getting sponsorships like NASCAR drivers and have Energizer on our team shirts.
Definitely need that. Yeah. I also have battery testers. So at the beginning of each investigation, we test all the batteries and make sure that they're good so that we know that, you know, if we haven't changed a battery and equipment for a while or something, that it's not the battery. So highly recommend that as well.
Yeah.
Another thing along that line, some people actually use battery testers for like paranormal investigating. Have you used anything like that or tried that?
No, I prefer the non-tech tools. So even though I have the, you know, the Eddy and a whole bunch of other tools, I stick with my dowsing rods, the pendulums. People laugh at me because I use fidget spinners. and I just, you know, I'm an old school girl. I like, you know, the digital voice recorder. I would use analog if you could still easily get tapes that were affordable, but digital makes it easier. But yeah, I try not to use too many of the tech tools just because a lot of false positives.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I want to go back to the crystals now.
Okay.
So there's so many cool things about like quartz crystals in general. I recently read that they, let's see, how does this work? They if you took your hand and put it on a slab of ice and you put a quartz crystal on a slab of ice, the quartz would melt it faster because it vibrates higher. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that? Have you tried that?
I've heard it, but I haven't tried it. But that it makes sense. I mean, crystals, quartz crystals are used for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I have them in the shape of a star in my house. It's the first thing that goes into any home I move into and the last thing that comes out. You know, it's in the shape of the star with the top point pointing north. And that's just my protection, you know, with the white light attached to that. And that's because it's, you know, the vibrations are higher, so it's believed to protect more. It's also believed to absorb negative energy that's coming into your home. So I need to try that.
I know. I have heard that. I always talk about it, but I've never tried it myself either. So, yeah. Also, there was stories of, this is going to be my question that no one's asked you. there's theories and research and stuff out there that the basin of Loch Ness is full of quartz crystals.
Yep.
And that could be why, like, some people believe that this is like some portal or interdimensional gateway. Have you heard that? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have heard that. And my theory on that is Loch Ness is just because of the crystal underneath, it's a residual type of haunting. You know, that's why it's not, you know, in focus. It doesn't really interact with anybody when it gets close to it. It just kind of disappears. It could be a portal because I know people have used crystal to open portals and also to close them. But I truly do believe that that's just a residual energy of some type of prehistoric animal that's hanging around.
That's interesting. That's cool. I've recently been hearing a lot of theories on that. We had Christopher Noel at our last conference that we were at, and he spoke about like spirit Bigfoots. You know, everyone says that Bigfoot has these paranormal qualities and stuff. And he says, well, what if it's just the ghost of a Bigfoot that you're seeing disappear and walk through the woods and that. So along that line, though, why aren't we seeing other creatures like dinosaurs or, you know, other weirder things? Like, you don't really see like the giant, you know, Brontosaurus, Brachiosaurus, Stegosaurus, Triceratops, you know, any of these things lumbering around in swamps and stuff. We do. But,
could you imagine that?
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think? Why are we seeing ghosts of people and animals like pets, like dogs, cats, other things like that? Why aren't we seeing more ghosts of other animals?
I truly do think that it's a combination of different things. Even though I can't dismiss that we don't have dinosaurs haunting us. One example is we were investigating a museum and we were in the dinosaur room where they actually had the skeletons, not just replicas. They actually had skeletons of dinosaurs. And we captured an EVP that nobody responded to. And I know it was nobody's stomach because the digital voice recorder was at least 6 feet away from everybody sitting on a display shelf. And we captured what sounded almost like a squawking growl. And it was like, I got goosebumps when I heard it. I'm like, oh, you know, so excited. But the main reason I think that we don't see like dinosaurs a lot is because if you think about it, if it's residual energy and it's playing, you know, like a tape recorder, if you play that tape recorder millions of times, eventually the quality is going to get worse and worse until you can't play it anymore. And I do feel that that's similar to paranormal activity. Even intelligent haunts, over time, it just loses its connection to Earth and just kind of fades away.
Hmm. That's a good point. Very good. So when you have other areas like of high paranormal activity, you know, such as like Gettysburg and stuff, you talked about having these quartz, these high amounts of quartz and stuff in the areas, you know, the triangles and such. Do you think that there's high levels of quartz at Gettysburg, or is it just, why is there so much activity there?
Right. I haven't researched the quartz content of the soil up there yet, but the one thing, because I've had personal experiences in Gettysburg. I used to go there. Our summer vacations were going to Gettysburg. We were one of those families that took those types of trips instead of Disney World. And I met Mark Nesbitt, bounced a lot of theories off of him over the years. And it's that one's more about tragedy. You have not only is the soil filled with the blood of those who died up there. You have the psychic imprint of how they felt when they died, leaving residual energy. Then you also have the soldiers wandering around wondering what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine like some of those, you know, impacts of, you know, the weapons explosions and stuff, you know, it's so just an instantaneous, you know, death that, you know, all of a sudden 1 minute you're here and in a war and the next you're just not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's gotta be hard, especially for the spirit, not knowing what happened.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think that, you know, a lot of these hauntings and stuff that you hear are all period clothing? You know, they always say, why isn't there somebody walking around with a Britney Spears shirt on or, you know, something more recent, more relevant to our time? Why don't we see ghosts manifest from our time period?
I do think that they still manifest from our time period. It's just, I think the newer spirits, I guess you would say, are more selective. And then if you go the spiritual route of that, the newer spirits are still getting their footing in the afterlife. So they're either, you know, have crossed over and haven't learned how to come back where the other spirits have because they've had all this time. There's a lot of different theories on there. I mean, one EVP we captured, we were investigating near where Tupac was shot. And someone said, wouldn't it have been cool for us to have captured Tupac? And on the video camera, we have a voice that comes in like immediately after that says, I'm right here. So whether it was actually Tupac saying, hey, I'm here, or another spirit saying, well, why don't you talk to me? I'm right here. We don't know, but it didn't sound like any type of, I mean, I know it's hard to say, but a lot of the EVPs that you get of these older spirits have certain dialects or have certain ways of speaking. And this actually spoke like someone who was more recent.
Very interesting. Very good. Very good. I know my team kind of theorized on this, you know, like I said, the newer ghost appearance look and stuff. And we said, well, you know, there haven't been a lot of, I guess I'm not saying that properly because there have been a lot of, you know, mass tragedies and stuff, but something like Gettysburg again, right. You know, and the only thing that we could really come up with that was modern was 9/11. Mm-hmm. And we thought if anywhere was going to have the residual energy and the paranormal imprint that Gettysburg did or some of these other, you know, battles and stuff or the asylums, et cetera, would have been there. And we actually thought about going out to New York to do an investigation around there. But I mean, as you obviously know, I mean, just thinking about this, there's so many problems with that because, right. I mean, it is New York. And you try and do EMF, EVP, REM pods, any kind of electrical equipment, there's so much interference down there. You're going to get people talking, and there's just no good way to do that down there. Yeah. So,
and how do you respectfully contact the state of New York and say, hey, can we shut down this area to do a paranormal investigation?
Or the museum even, you know, right. How could you, you know, do that? Yeah. It's just like,
I know the where the Route 66 concert happened in Vegas with that mass shooting there. I know people have reported who work there that they've, after the shooting, that they've heard cries, phantom gunfire, and even people who work in MGM Mandalay Bay, where the gunshots came from. Mm-hmm. They've reported eerie feelings around that room, and that could be associated with just knowing what happened. But other people have also reported hearing voices and gunfire coming from that room as well.
Do you think that that's kind of self-manifested, or do you think that that's more of an imprint of what happened? Do you think that people, like you said, know what happened there, so they just reject that voices and hearing that stuff, or are actually hearing it?
I do believe so, part of it, because that's one theory that I laid out in my first book that I wrote, was that, like, ghost towns, are they really haunted? Or is it possibly that these reenactments people do in ghost towns, or people going to the towns wanting to experience paranormal activity, are they self-manifesting it because they want to so badly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. There's so many layers to all of this stuff that, you know, even... you have to try and filter out what's like you said, self-manifested versus something that's actually there and residual. You know, it's like the saying, you know, whatever you study, you change. So by going to an area and doing an investigation, even if nothing is there, you can bring that energy in. And, you know, like people always say, well, I want to talk to my grandma, so I'm going to go to my grandma's house to do a paranormal investigation, or I'm going to go to her grave where, you know, she's buried to talk to her. But if you have these actual spirits, you have these people that have passed on, you don't need to go to a specific location to talk to them. They can be anywhere, right?
Yeah, my grandfather, he actually followed me from Illinois to Florida, out to Vegas, and back to Florida. So he's still hanging around regardless of where I've lived.
Absolutely. I think that's important for people that are interested in this and, you know, going through stuff to understand that just because, you know, you don't have to go to a certain space, it's more of the who you want to contact and putting that intention out. Or, you know, even if you don't want to contact him per se, you know, like in your case, maybe that he just followed you to watch over you or in his own, for his own reasons or whatever, you know. It's like Santa Claus. No matter where you live, he knows where you live.
Exactly. He has the address.
He's got it already. Oh, man. That's so cool. So this whole thing is just so fascinating and stuff, you know, talking about the energy of, you know, these crystals and the places that they've been in that. Oh, wow.
That's why I said I have more answers or more questions than I've gotten answers since I've started researching.
Right.
It's like, I'm almost afraid to deep dive into a new topic for fear of finding more stuff.
Absolutely. I knew there was something else in your bio here I wanted to talk about. So it says you were recently featured in a documentary where these are all different things here. Author, this might be a book. Haunted Nevada Mines.
Oh, Haunted. Actually, it's Haunted Southern Nevada Ghost Towns.
That's not what it says here.
Oh, does it? Did I give you the wrong bio?
No, you didn't. You know, this is off of WLTK, DB, Talk Radios.
I'm going to have to talk to Todd about that.
It's Haunted Nevada Mines TBA.
Oh, that was a book that was I'm working on. Yeah, but I was featured in Real Haunts Ghost Towns, which covered some mines. Because I was like, Todd knew that I had filmed a pilot episode inside one of the mines up in Nevada, but that one fell through. So I was like, I got to talk to him to get that removed. But no, that's a book that I'm working on.
Very cool.
And Real Haunts Ghost Towns covered all the different ghost towns. And that was actually the inspiration for the book. And then Real Haunts 3 covered the Goldfield Hotel, along with five other locations across the U.S.
Awesome. So, yeah. We got to investigate the Portal 31 mine down in Kentucky. And I going into it, my mom wanted to go down there and go in the coal mine because we were going down to Kentucky for a different we were actually going down to film with Turtle Man. And so we ended up stopping at this Portal 31 and I said we should do a paranormal investigation there, and she goes, well, somebody already had and said it was haunted and stuff, so we got permission, went in and filmed it. And I'm like, you know, I don't really care about coal mines, you know, I don't you know, it wasn't interesting. And after I did the investigation and I started working on the episode, there's so much cool information about just the history of the coal mine industry in Kentucky and that. And that's why I was interested. Can you talk about like the Nevada mines? Like, is that still like coal mines, or what are they mining there? And they
mine everything from coal, phosphorus, gold, silver. I mean, you name it, they mined it out there. But the one mine that we did a major investigation in was the Florence mine up in Goldfield. We actually went down into a collapsed mining shaft where I was psychically attacked. I just started crying. I was hearing the cries of men screaming for their lives. And then all of a sudden I couldn't breathe. And we found out that where that mine had collapsed, there were men still back there and they never got their bodies out after it had collapsed. So that was a very interesting experience. I thought I was dying. They actually had to get me out of there. Another investigator went down the full mine shaft, and he went down, I think he said it was like almost 7 stories that they had to climb down, and they sat down and did an EVP session, and he felt like something almost knocked the wind out of him. like just a force came and hit him and like went through him, but took his, you know, breath out with him. And we had nonstop experiences on the surface too. You know, it was just, it was nonstop. And then we, for Real Haunts Ghost Towns, we investigated the Nelson Mine out in Nelson, Nevada. And that was an interesting place, very, very creepy. And we were actually told, because one thing I tell people is don't go into a mine unless you've either been told where to go and where not to go, or you have a someone guiding you. Because even though it looks like on film that we didn't have anyone with us, we did. And that was a creepy one because they told us not to go down a certain tunnel because within 10 feet of that tunnel's entrance, it like went into a never-ending abyss. And it was like, so that added to the creepy factor there. But we heard everything from knocks on the walls, which could have been dripping water, shadow figures. It sounded like someone threw a rock at us, and just a whole bunch of interesting things that, I mean, you think about all the people who worked, lived, died inside these mines and at the camps. I mean, the energy is just, even outside the mine, is unbelievable.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't care too much about it when I started, mm-hmm. but it's so fascinating. Like the whole town is built up around these mines in some mm-hmm. cases. You know, it's a mining town. And that never really like resonated with me because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a mining town. So there's a mine there and, you know, people work there and, you know, it's big industry. But it's the other way around. The mine mm-hmm. came and they needed a place for all their employees to work. They built town stores, all company stores where mm-hmm. you got credit, you know, and got to buy all this stuff. And you had movie theaters and all this stuff built just for the mining industry of these places. It's such a cool. And then you have like the lumber industry is the same way. Mm-hmm. You have whole towns built up around the lumber industry. And it's just fascinating learning about history.
It's kind of like Kissimmee and St. Cloud were built to house the people who worked at Disney World, or, you know, Henderson, Nevada was built for people who worked in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's so cool. I never thought of that. No, Disney's like its own whole city. It's not even just like a theme park down there in Florida. I've never been there. So all this stuff is fascinating. What are you working on now? What do you got coming out? What do you got books? What are you, besides the little bit of research that we talked about already?
Right. The two books that are already out from History Press are Haunted Southern Nevada Ghost Towns and Ghosts and Legends of the Vegas Valley. Those I did research when I lived out there. And then since I've moved to Florida, I have written, and it's coming out September 11th, is Haunted Florida Lighthouses.
Okay.
And the two books that I'm working on right now are, they're both for Florida, and it's Haunted Roadside Attractions and Haunted Florida Ghost Towns.
You always hear like, it's not the first time I've heard about haunted mm-hmm. Florida lighthouses. Mm-hmm. Like there's tons of this. Why are these lighthouses haunted?
My theory is from the research that I've done, there's more than 200 lighthouses in Florida alone. But 90% of them are no longer in operation. And there you have the hurricanes that came through, like the one lighthouse in outside of Tampa. The lighthouse keeper, she was there. Her daughter was visiting with her family, and 9 other residents went with her, and they hid in the base of the lighthouse during the hurricane, and the lighthouse was completely destroyed. I mean, there was no sign of it left, and she was the only survivor. So you have not only the death, but you have her grief. People report seeing her walking the shores looking for her family. Other cases, you have pirating happened. A lot of illegal activity happened around lighthouses, and lighthouses were target of during the Seminole Wars. And then they were also target during the Civil War. There's one lighthouse up in Pensacola that was actually the only lighthouse and fort maintained by Union control. Everything else was Confederate control. And they actually destroyed a lot of lighthouses that were built to not have that beacon to give Union troops, you know, hey, here's land, come attack us type of thing.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, you always hear about, you know, Gettysburg and some other mm-hmm. like areas where these battles took place during the Civil War. I've never really heard too much about Florida being a big part of the Civil War.
Yeah, it was. That's actually my next research project once I finish these two that I'm working on right now.
I was going to say, I thought there was something in your bio also about the Civil War and stuff.
Yeah. I have some contracts for different books waiting to be worked on, and they told me what order they want me to work on them in.
Yeah. Haunted Florida Civil War sites. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. So you're an instructor at the iMystic University? So you also teach this stuff?
I was. That one, actually, she took it down. That was one of the projects that my friend out in Vegas had to take down because she just didn't have time to do it. But with iMystic University, we did classes on psychic abilities. You know, I did paranormal 101 courses on how to, you know, use paranormal, basically the basics. And then I had some more in-depth classes on different tools and tricks. And then there was one class that I loved teaching. It was non-tech tools. And we did deep dives into different things in your home that you can go investigating with that, you know, people don't think of. You know, just some simple things that you can do. My favorite that everybody always laughs at is get a cookie sheet with the little ABC magnetic letters and try to talk. I mean, I've never had a spirit move them, but it's, you know, in theory, it's a great idea that you can do that. But I've now switched over to teaching online courses through TMCC out of Reno, Nevada.
Hmm. Very cool. Very cool. So what are your thoughts on people actually investigating their own homes?
For me personally, I wouldn't do it. I don't recommend people do it because not only are you biased because it's your own home, there's a lot of opportunities for self-manifestation. And also you being the homeowner opens your door up to letting these spirits in. Like my house, it's fully protected with crystals. I have blessed sea salt from Reverend Sean Whittington that I've sprinkled around the home. Herbs, little herb jar. Everyone laughs when they come visit. There's little herb jars everywhere. And I won't even, we purchased a spirit box several years ago to use on a event because everybody wanted instant, you know, the instant satisfaction that they heard a spirit or not. So when we got it, I wouldn't let anyone turn it on in the house. Mm-hmm. We went to a park to test it to see if it even worked because I just wasn't about to do any, you know, it's your home should be your sanctuary. The spirits can haunt. Yeah. Same thing with spiders. They can be elsewhere in the environment, but don't come in my home.
Yeah, agreed. No, I 100% agree with that. I know mm-hmm. like a lot of people say, well, we started selling paranormal equipment and stuff, EMF mm-hmm. mirrors and stuff. And they're like, I can't wait to get this home and try it out. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't go to
a park.
Go to your friend's house. Try it there. You know, and that's really important. I want to, something you just said, I want to come back to. It's gone. I'm going to try and think about that. But, you know, do you want to talk a little bit about like safety and stuff, like you said about, you know, protecting yourself and, mm-hmm. you know, putting the intention out. If you do try and communicate with something in your house, do it the right way. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I'm a big person on do what you believe will protect you. You know, just because I have, or even because everyone says, oh, hey, sage protects you. Well, sage only works for a couple hours and then it wears off. So you have to do it's your belief that makes it continue on. So like for me, I have a pentacle necklace that I wear. I have a little herb jar and some crystals that I tuck in my pocket. And then, of course, just because I do a lot of help with Roman Catholic families, I have medallions that have been given to me and blessed by different priests and pastors, and then also blessed holy water and sea salt that I take with. Just because, you know, that goes along with the aspect of you can't help someone. Like if I were to go in and do some different pagan rituals, the Roman Catholic family would be like, what the heck is she doing? You know, and then that activity is not going to go away because they don't believe in the protection. So use what you believe in. I even tell people, and this works great if you have kids, if you truly believe that your teddy bear is going to protect you, you've increased your chances of staying safe during a paranormal investigation by 99%. You know, they're not the end all be all in protection, but it just increases your chances on staying safe. And stand your ground in your home. You know, don't let the spirits in the first place, because even if you think it's, you know, grandma or grandpa, even though I know my grandfather's here, I don't interact with him just because you never know who you are interacting with. Mm-hmm. And once you encourage it, it's one of those things where then they're going to latch on and reveal their true self if it's not grandma or grandpa.
Definitely. Well said. Well said. I always hear these stories in cryptozoology and paranormal of, you know, like, oh, I saw this creature come, you know, this shadow entity or this, you know, Bigfoot. And I said, you know, in God's name, I rebuke you. And it backed away. And I thought to myself, you know, well, I'm not spiritual in that way. I don't, you know, I believe in higher power. I believe in life after, but I don't believe God, capital G, is, you know, gonna condemn me or whatever, or judge me, or, you know. Okay, so how can I justify the fact that people are saying this works? And then I started doing research into, you know, just the energy itself. It's not specifically what you believe, but that you believe. If I believe in, you know, this water bottle is the almighty, most powerful thing in my house, and I see this demon and I'm like, this water will get rid of you, it will work. Right.
It will.
And it is your energy and your belief and stuff that you're putting out that is what's doing that. And I found that very interesting, because, you know, when, no matter what it is, as long as you believe in it, like you said, your teddy bear, you know, these children that have these protectors of, you know, they see something under their bed and their teddy bear or whatever favorite stuffed animal is there to protect them, will protect them, because they put the energy and the faith in it.
And I find it funny, because if you have Bigfoot coming at you, he's not going to know who God is. In my opinion, he might, I don't know, but he's not going to know who you're praying to. So it's your own personal belief and everything. And I even tell people, because they're like, well, you can't, you know, say that you're, you know, like I use moon water and sun water and all of that stuff, you know, storm water. And I also bless it myself. I always tell people, you can bless your own herbs. You can bless your own crystals, you know, your own waters. Granted, it's not religious holy water, but it has your intentions, you know, set forth into those items.
Intentions. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
My brain is just not working. I had something I was going with there.
My mind does that to me on shows as well.
Yep. It was there. It was something you said and I went, oh, I got to come back to this, and it's gone now. With the energy and the intention of what you're putting out and stuff. Well, let's talk about that. So let's say you do want to communicate with a family member or a loved one and stuff. You can use your intention the same way and put that intention to draw them in. Can you talk about that?
You can. I haven't perfected it, just because that's not something I'm interested in doing. But you can, as long as you're even just thinking about them, sometimes you can have them appear to you in a dream that night. And a lot of people think you dream about them because you've thought of them, but it could also be that you've drawn them in. And that's how a lot of spirits communicate with us, is through our dreams. And it goes, like, even with the different spirits, I have friends who use their psychic abilities to do investigations, and they have spirits that follow them everywhere. And when they get to a location, they're like, okay, those who followed me here, I don't want to talk to you, but I want to talk to this person. And everyone else stays quiet, but that one person comes to them. So it's all about pinpointing your mind. And again, that goes to, is it being self-manifested, or is that really bringing that one person to you?
I'm going to lose what I was going to say, but I absolutely hate spirit boxes. And yeah, I think
we only use them at events.
You hear what you want to hear. You hear what you think you should hear. I do, though, 100% like the Estes method.
Yes.
Where one person has the blindfold on and the noise-canceling headphones, and they're listening to the spirit box and repeating what they hear. And then everyone else in the group is asking the questions and looking for the responses. And we have had phenomenal results this way. Because you cannot be biased on what is being asked and what you're hearing. And it works so much better.
Right. And it's also, there's other theories behind that too, which is why that method was created, because we can psychically imprint what we're, let's say you ask a question and I think of the answer in my head, my answer could be relayed to the spirit box. So the answer you hear is mine, not the actual spirit's.
Mm.
So by not knowing the questions that are being asked, it's one of those things that reduces it a little bit less by the one person listening to it.
I've also heard that that when you're doing it, I get like, I do this a lot, the Estes method. Mm-hmm. And I end up getting into this like meditative state by listening to the And some people believe that you're actually not hearing the voices through the spirit box, but actually channeling it yourself, kind of like psychically and stuff. And I can't speak to that. I don't know, you know, but I do know that I've seen things in my head, and I've heard things that I don't know came from the spirit box, or I just felt an answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I know, you know, that makes sense, but.
Oh, no, trust me. I completely get it.
Yeah,
because like there's a lot of times on investigations
or a name or something. Yeah,
yeah, a lot of times on investigations, even without the Estes method, I'll find myself in a quiet corner, and I'll just sit there and meditate, keep my, you know, close my eyes, pretend nobody's with me, you know, and I get a lot of voices. Sometimes you want to think you're crazy because. You know, it's like, okay, I heard this, but it didn't come across on the, you know, the EVP recorder or the video camera. But yeah, I like to do that and just kind of meditate and float away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Back to still on the spirit boxes. You said that you don't use it in your house. You wouldn't turn it on in your house and stuff. Mm-hmm. When I first got mine, I was the same way. I'm not going to turn it on in my house. And I charged it. I wanted to make sure I knew how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it on and I set it up and the only thing that I had and let come through, the voice said, "Here to help."
Mm-hmm.
And I went, "Good. That's all I need to know. You're here to help. All right. Thank you. Goodbye. We're done. I don't know who you are, but you're here to help. That's fine. You can help all you want, but we're not going to continue this discussion. You can help me somewhere else." But I thought, good. All right. You're here to help. Perfect. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I remember the other thing I was going to bring up is we were talking about energy and intent and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for people who don't really understand that, you know, if you have these stories of people when they have kids, right. And you're laying in bed at night and you just wake up because you feel someone standing next to the bed. And then your child is standing there, or you're in a crowded room and you feel someone watching you. You know, or you think you're being watched and you turn and look and somebody's staring at you, you know, it's the same thing. That's the intent. That's that energy that's being put out. And, you know, like for anybody that thinks this is all, you know, whack job or, you know, insane stuff. I mean, look at your everyday life how many times has that happened to somebody out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'll even notice sometimes I'll be in public and I'll be deep in thought and just staring into space, but it just so happens to be in the direction of somebody. And they'll turn and look at me and it's like, oh no, I wasn't staring at you. Trust me.
I've actually tried that as an experiment with mm-hmm. people like in public spaces. I will sit and stare at someone and see if I can get them to turn and look at me to see if they can feel that and feel that energy. I'm weird. Right. You know, I don't think anybody that's listening to this or on these shows is not weird. So I feel like we're all in the same boat here.
That's your next experiment. Try it with 100 people over the course of a month and see how many turn.
I actually did want to like put somebody in the middle of a circle and have everyone like on the outside close their eyes except one.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the people that's standing around you would be staring at you and see if the person in the middle could pinpoint which person was staring at them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
I love science. I love, you know, the scientific method and just all this stuff. I was going to ask you that too. Can we want to talk about the scientific method, how it works, what the steps are and stuff for people, because maybe they didn't understand what it was. You know, I remember back in high school because I love science, but for anybody that's listening that doesn't know what the scientific method is, can you kind of talk about that and explain it?
Yeah. It's basically just your methodology of being able to confirm or deny if an experiment works or not. So with that, you always want to have your question. What question do you want answered? And that's your hypothesis. So like for one example would have been the one experiment I talked about earlier is, does energy fluctuations, you know, change with the full moon type of thing? And then you write down what different experiments you can use to test that. whether it's, you know, with an EDI Plus, a K2 meter or whatever, and then you outline how you're going to use each one. And then once you start getting results, you document all those results and come up with a conclusion. Excuse me. But then you need to go back and retest it to see if you get the same results like the next month. And it might even be one of those things where, like the experiment I shared, you're not going to get the same result every month because, of course, the moon's in different locations. But it might be one of those things where you have to go back next, you know, next May and redo the experiment and see if you get the same results. So it's a long, drawn out process, but it's all a matter of getting your hypothesis, coming up with an experiment, doing the experiment, analyzing your evidence, and coming up with that conclusion to be able to retest it or to see if it's not even worth retesting.
Absolutely. Perfect. Yeah, it's a lot. It can be fun, but it's a lot of very diligent and painstaking work. And
Yeah, it's not as quick as they taught us in high school. It's not the, if you water this plant, but not this plant will grow and this plant will die. And okay, experiment done.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Oh man, it's absolutely been fascinating talking to you. So much cool stuff going on here and just, yeah. So we have about 5 minutes left here. Can you tell everyone all your shows that you got now? I know you're on WLTK. Anything else you got going on? Where people can find your books, website, and all that stuff?
Okay, yeah. The shows I host is Tuesday mornings. It's 10 a.m. Eastern to noon. Tuesday mornings, it's called Exploring the Paranormal. That's where we take a two-hour journey into the paranormal. Each week, I have a different guest. I know I've had Joe Frankie on, and Dan Rivera, a whole bunch of different guests. Sometimes I don't even have a guest and I just wing it for 2 hours, babbling back and forth with myself. But I have fun doing all of that. Then every other Wednesday night, I co-host Ghost Education 101. We started that show back when COVID started as a means to educate the public on different paranormal research methods. This week, we actually air live tomorrow from 9 p.m. Eastern to 11 for 2 hours. And we have John Zaffis joining us. And that show rotates between a guest, a presentation that we put together, and then a panel discussion. We rotate through those three during that. And then Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, I just started hosting Passport to the Paranormal with Joe Frankie. So we're having fun with that one so far.
Wow.
And then you can find my websites there, heatherleephd.com. Also on Facebook at Dr. Heather Lee. And so many different books coming up, I can't even keep track myself. And that you can all find on the website, or if you go to the History Press, they have them listed there.
Awesome. So cool. So much stuff to get through here. Definitely. And I know, I think I'm coming on your show.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I don't remember when that is. Do you remember when that is?
No, but I think I have it up on my computer. I've been booking so far ahead, Todd can't keep up with me. August 29th.
Yep. I just scrolled through it too. That will be right after MI Paracon.
Okay.
So I'll be fresh off of that week. So
awesome. Lots of good information coming from that then.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's always a good time. So yep. hopefully I get a chance to hear some presentations. We're actually vending this year. So that'll be different. Just went as customers the last 2 years. And now we're actually going to have a booth and set up and stuff. So
that'll be awesome. Cool. Lots of fun.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to continuing our chat in August and on Tuesday morning. So I will share that when we get to there as well. But for anybody listening, to keep that
sounds
in mind.
Good. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. Thank you. And I will talk to you later.
Yep. Have a great day.
You too. All right, guys, that is our show for today. Thanks for joining us on Whispers from the Dark. We got a lot of stuff coming up and a lot of stuff we're getting into. I apologize for not having, you know, the scheduled regular weekly shows like we usually do. But hopefully we get out as many as we can because we're just so busy with all kinds of stuff. And we got a lot of cool stuff coming up next year and the rest of this year. Coming up in August is part two of our UFO episode. So you'll have that to look forward to. And just a lot of stuff coming from CAPS. And hopefully we can talk about that and share it more here soon. But there's a lot of stuff coming. And that's why we're not getting out a lot of whispers from the dark because we're just so busy with everything else. So thanks for listening. And I appreciate your support and hanging out with us. And hopefully we can see you out there real soon. So until next time, guys, I'm Burnaby and I'll see you out there. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Whispers from the Dark. To find out more about cryptids, anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, visit us at our website at wisconsincaps.com. That's Wisconsin, CAPS.com. There you can find links to all of our social media, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and our Patreon. You will see links to our online store as well, where you can get t-shirts, DVDs, and more. If you click on the public events page, you can find out where you can meet us in person and all the public events we have coming up. If you enjoy our podcasts or our YouTube shows, please consider becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/WisconsinCaps. There you can find behind-the-scenes pictures and videos from all of our media, as well as bonus footage and evidence that we have collected. If you have encountered something you can't explain, we want to hear from you. Visit our website and click on Submit a Report on our main screen. You can choose to leave your contact information or simply remain anonymous. You can also reach us via email at wisconsincaps@gmail.com. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please contact us on our Whispers from the Dark podcast page on Facebook, or send us an email at wisconsincaps.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen or watch or find us.